So I've been working on my authorization service, and it's totally sweet. It's only taken me 6 months to build it. Just 6 months. I started implementing some basic RBAC library, but that wasn't enough, obviously. So I designed relationship-based fine-grained authorization for the highest security possible. And then, to make it super fast, I used a GPU tower, running in my mom's basement, of course, connected via optic cable to bare metal server at my local esports lounge, permissions, restrictions, and admin. Nailed it.
Wait. Whatever you did sounds cool, but like, there's also another option.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with permit.io. Permit is the full-stack authorization platform created so you never have to build permissions again. Build and manage permissions for any application with policy as code, APIs, developer-friendly SDKs, and user-facing UIs. Permit is an end-to-end authorization platform built on top of open-source policy engines. It's high-performing, gets decisions in less than 10 milliseconds, and uses a hybrid approach where config is in the cloud, but data and decisions are made locally. Not only is it intuitive, it lets you implement fully functional authorization in 5 minutes, not 6 months, and in the code base you prefer. Check out the link in the show notes or go to permit.io to learn more. That's permit.io. Sign up for Permit and stop rebuilding auth.
We're building a technical business and there's a lot of technology involved in what we're doing. But the MVP for Craftwork was, can we get someone to hire us to paint a room in their home? It's that. That was it. Really, there's a lot more involved in getting to that point, but one of the first things we did as we were researching the company is we started to make relationships with skilled painters in Charlotte. We very quickly started working with our master painter. His name is Omar, who's been painting homes for a very long time. He's extremely talented, and he has the gift of being able to teach people very gracefully. And so what that meant was when we started painting last year in January of 2023, myself and my co-founders were in the room that I'm actually recording this podcast in, learning how to paint. My name is Mike Bifulco. I'm CTO and co-founder of Craftwork.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Spent 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing at the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
Took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, Mike.
Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want
it. It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labpart, and today how Mike Bifulco is connecting tech and home painting so you can get your house painted without the heartburn. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools lack proper security, putting sensitive data at risk. With Kiteworks MFT, companies can send automated or ad hoc files in a fully integrated, highly secure manner. The solution is FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense and has been so since 2017. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. This episode is sponsored by ClearQuery. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. With Ask ClearQuery, you can find valuable insights into your data using plain English. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify your data analytics with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. Mike Bifulco studied mechanical engineering and computer science in college. He was always good with computers, dating back to his high school freshman CS class. Coming out of school, he applied to 300 entry-level jobs, interviewed for 15 of them, received offers for 3, and turned them all down to start his own company. Outside of tech, he is into road cycling and enjoys the ritual, science, and community around making and enjoying a good cup of coffee or espresso. He's also a musician, adding to the growing list of successful tech entrepreneurs who also are talented musicians. Post looking for his next gig, Mike and his co-founder started to realize that the bar is very low for painting companies. It is a business that has not caught up to modern tech. So they started to think, how do we make a business that's like DoorDash for your home painting needs? This is the creation story
of Kraftwerk.
Kraftwerk is a tech-connected home painting service company. We are based in North Carolina, here in Charlotte, where the company was founded. Having your home painted is a really rough experience in general. A lot of homeowners have experienced trying to hire someone to do something at your home and having a really hard time of just getting the right person to show up reliably and do a great job of it. And that's essentially the essence of where Kraftwerk came from. The story essentially harkens back to my co-founders, Tim and Suzanne, who are married. They tried to have an accent wall painted in their kitchen and went through the experience of trying to find someone on Angie and on Craigslist and on Facebook Marketplace and all the places you might turn to try and find a contractor. They sent messages to half a dozen people, 10 people, something like that. About half of them responded. Of the ones who responded, several never actually got to the point of giving them a quote. Then you schedule some in-person estimates. And of the in-person estimates, some still never came back and gave them a quote. And the one they ended up hiring did a bad job in the end. Being a lifelong entrepreneur, that's one of those things that I think kicks you into gear and starts to get the mechanisms turning, right? That makes you realize that, hey, maybe there's a problem that can be solved here. I was working for Stripe just before starting Kraftwerk, and I was the unfortunate target of one of Stripe's rounds of layoffs. I have obviously no hard feelings towards Stripe, but November of 2022, I was laid off, and I had been talking to Tim Griffin, my co-founder, about starting a company together sometime. And the morning I was laid off, I got off the phone, took a big exhale, picked up my phone, called him and said, "Hey man, you ready to do this thing?" And we hit the ground running from there. It's been an interesting story since then. So we started January 1st of 2023. We started to figure out the business of painting, right? Putting together a business plan, researching, going really deep on what it's like to be a painter and what people experience when they try and hire painters. And the thing that we were bandying around at the time when we had first started putting the business together is that the bar is very low for home painting. Wherever you live, if you're listening to this and you're able to hire painters, you can punch into Google painters near me and you'll probably get a handful of listings for like really small-ish mom and pop type companies around you. They are lucky if they have a website. They're lucky if they have reviews on Google, and even luckier if they have it together enough to have something like an Instagram account set up where you can actually see their work. It's a business that's existed for a very long time, but just hasn't made the leap into modern tech experiences like you might expect. What we're building effectively is something like the DoorDash experience for getting your home painted, where you should be able to come to us, tell us about your project, submit a little bit of information. In most cases, without coming to your home and scheduling an in-person thing, we can commit to a price for that project and offer an estimate to our customers, generally speaking, within an hour or so. Even that in itself is a pretty different experience from having someone to come to your home to give you an in-person estimate. We do a really great job of communicating the whole way through. We set expectations for what we're going to do. We communicate with our customers like they're humans. We set expectations for our team that the painters who are coming on site and doing the work are really high-skilled people. They do a great job and they take pride in their work. Probably the most important thing and one of the things I'm most proud of is that all of the painters that work for Kraftwerk are our employees directly. So we're not a middleman service. We're not a marketplace or something like that. We hire and employ painters. We have a growing squad of 30 plus painters at this point who work for Kraftwerk and paint homes on our behalf. And they work for us. They're our employees. We guarantee them work. We give them healthcare benefits. We do a variety of things that are widely different from the service industry experience, which is typically if you're a painter, you're only paid per job and work is never guaranteed. And oftentimes painters are paid under the table, very low rates, because that's what people can get away with. I think that's one of those things that's a real differentiator for us.
Let's dive into the MVP, that first version of the product you built. How long did it take you to build, and what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
It's a funny thing, right? We're building a technical business, and there's a lot of technology involved in what we're doing. But the MVP for Kraftwerk was, can we get someone to hire us to paint a room in their home? It's that. That was it. Really, there's a lot more involved in getting to that point, but one of the first things we did as we were researching the company is we started to make relationships with skilled painters in Charlotte. We very quickly started working with our master painter. His name is Omar, who's been painting homes for a very long time. He's extremely talented, and he has the gift of being able to teach people very gracefully. And so what that meant was when we started painting last year in January of 2023, myself and my co-founders were in the room that I'm actually recording this podcast in, learning how to paint. Our first customer effectively was me, but that was us really diving in and learning how to do the thing. We're all standing in this room in old t-shirts and jeans and learning from a master painter how to paint. after we did that, we did the math on how to do pricing for painting and come together on those sorts of things. And our first month of work, maybe 2 months of work, was almost entirely kept on a spreadsheet. The first month's worth of customers, we were doing one project a day. We hired a very small team of painters, and we were going out to customers' homes and painting their home in a very simplistic way and just learning from every project as we went. We would observe the projects. We would collect feedback on how the process went. We would collect feedback on what our customers thought about pricing. We did that by using the old startup trick of turning to friends and family first. So I would say our first 60 days of customers were people we were extremely comfortable asking for feedback from and who were extremely comfortable having a lumpy experience as we got really good at doing what we're doing now. The tech side of this, the like tech MVP for that, was going from a spreadsheet to a website where someone can contact us, and then making the spreadsheet smarter over time. And effectively, we've scaled up and out from there.
What I'm curious about in my next question is, you know, with early versions of a product, you got to make decisions and trade-offs around, you know, how you approach the technology, how you maybe cut features, or the features that you start with, I think is a better way to put that, or even accept some technical debt. So tell me about some of those that you had to work through and how you coped with those decisions.
We talked a lot about focus early on and staying focused on getting really good at doing just a subset of the things that people might expect us to do. When we started, we were only doing interior painting, and we were just doing essentially interior walls and ceiling and doors and things like that. Similarly, we weren't doing exterior painting, and we were also not doing commercial painting. So if a bar or restaurant called us, we would say no, at least initially. And that story has changed over time. But the idea was to get deeply invested in understanding how this worked, not only as a business, but as an experience that customers go through. And then also making sure that we could hire people who were really good at this thing and get good at it rather than go wide. That also means that we said no to a lot of things. A good example of that is wallpaper. So a lot of people will paint a room and also put a wallpaper. And our answer, at least in the beginning, was, sorry, we don't do wallpaper. We won't even take it down, right? That's something that can create uncertainty and can cause a lot of hiccups early on. And until we were really certain that we had a process for removing wallpaper, or at least a team of people who was really good at removing wallpaper, we didn't do that. We also went really deep on research and trying to figure out how to correctly do pricing for painting. As it works out, all the paint manufacturers, if you have a paint can lying around in your home, you can read the big label on the side of the can. And there's loads of technical information published about every single paint product out there that will give you information down to like the square foot of how much that gallon of paint should cover. You can imagine from there the cost of the paint can, how many square feet of wall area that paint will cover. You can get to what does it cost in terms of materials to paint the wall. And then we can also determine how long it'll take to paint a certain size, shape of room. And we use that to build out our initial model for pricing. And so one of the things we've done fairly differently for pricing is our pricing isn't based on an exact square foot understanding of the space you're in, but rather than basing our pricing on the exact square footage of the room you're in and like the down to the inch surface area that needs to be painted, we kind of bucket rooms based on their general size. So you can think of that as something like 0 to 200 square feet, it might cost this much, and 200 to 400 square feet, it might cost a little more, and 400 to 600, and so on. It stopped us from having to go in and measure everything with a tape measure and do a bunch of architectural drawings to get just a simple price to paint a room, and it really simplifies the customer's experience as well. A lot of things early on added up, right? We were learning about actually painting and all the things that go into that and why it's a hard thing. We also learned a fair bit about why homeowners will start painting a room and give up, or the common problems they run into. We learned a ton about pricing, and we learned a ton about working with painters, trying to find the right team of people to work and the right sort of personalities that are people who will come and do a great job and get some personal satisfaction out of doing really high quality work. It's solving a lot of problems at once, some mathematical, some human, some social, and making sure that sort of people are good to each other and that they communicate well along the way.
This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools are dated and lack the security that today's remote workforce demands. Companies that continue relying on outdated technology put their sensitive data at risk. And that's where Kiteworks comes in. Kiteworks MFT is absolutely the most secure MFT on the market today. It has been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. Through FedRAMP, Kiteworks' level of security compliance provides a fast route to CMMC compliance, saving customers time, effort, and money. Kiteworks MFT makes it easy for users to send automated or ad hoc files via fully integrated shared folders and email. Administrators can manage policies in a unified console and create custom integrations using their API.
Did we mention it's secure? The level of security with Kiteworks solution is rare to find. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's KiteWorks.com. This episode is sponsored by Cachefly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where Cachefly comes in. Cachefly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, Cachefly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only Cachefly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cachefly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. So then you've got the MVP, it's working, you are solving the problems. How did you progress the product from there? And I'm curious about, you know, through that maturation process, how you built your roadmap, how you went about deciding, okay, this is the next most important thing to build or to address with Kraftwerk.
Generally speaking, our goal was to make it so that our customers could get a price for their project without us having to show up in person. That comes along with the tacit expectation that they will communicate with us in a multimodal fashion. So what that means is they might submit a form on our website to start a project. They might later send us an email with more detail. They might text us more detail. They might text us a picture or a video, for example, and they might call us. And we know that we have this sort of rich multimodal conversation before we even show up to their home. And we want to unify that thing so that we have a great understanding of the context of a customer's desires and their projects and the type of home that they're looking to live in. We built software to accommodate that. So what we've essentially done is built a kind of coach-built CRM and sales tool that allows us to communicate well with customers in a way that's at least somewhat standardized and feels consistent, regardless of who you're actually talking to at the company. Agree to a pricing with a customer, and then a process that goes from, okay, we've agreed on a pricing, to we've taken a deposit and scheduled your thing, to all of the like logistical side of this, which is making sure we have the right team of people showing up at the right place at the right time with the right paints and that they know what they're going to do. We scaled up the tools in that way, where we're building sort of a sales process and an operations process. And then from a customer-facing feature set, we also went from just interior painting, as I alluded to before, to also cabinetry painting and also exterior painting. And we've also started to do a small amount of commercial painting along the way as well. Well, what we learned from that is that there's quite a bit to build there. There's a great big internal tool which we're building to help us keep track of all of the projects and sales and discussions we're having and all the complexities that come with that. There's external facing customer things like our website, so kraftwerk.com. We built a very highly SEO optimized site that drives people to us if they're looking for what are great gray paint colors for bathrooms. We want to draw that traffic in to build some trust in our brand, that we're doing something that we know what we're talking about, we have opinions on it, we've worked with customers like you in the past, for example. And the website has to be something that also lets people communicate with us in the ways that they might expect. So uploading images and submitting estimates quickly and getting a response that they can trust and doesn't feel fully automated and it has a personal touch. The third tier of thing that we're building is a mobile app that is really good at understanding the needs of our painters. So we have a Kraftwerk app that is literally used just by our internal team to understand what they're doing each day. So clock in and out of a job, understand what's being painted, where you're supposed to go in terms of like directions on a map, contact information for the customer, for escalating things to HQ if they need more supplies or help or if something unexpected comes up, documenting what they're doing with pictures, and then creating a level of sort of personal touch that is beyond just what you'd expect. If we were painting your home tomorrow, the day before your project starts, we actually send you an email that is very nicely designed with a list of all of the work we're doing. So here's all the rooms we're painting, here's swatches for all the colors. It has a list of the names of the people on the team who are showing up at your home and their headshots. So we do headshots for all of our team members. And it creates a personal connection. It tells a little bit about those people, right? What their favorite sports team is, or what their favorite food is, so that when someone knocks on your door the next day, you already feel like you understand who's coming. And that has the psychological effect of creating something that feels a little more welcome at home, rather than tomorrow a cloud of strangers are going to show up and let themselves into our bedroom. The design, the service design aspect of this is really important too. And we've been iterating on all of those things along the way by starting with manual processes and iterating from basic features to more sort of rich feature sets that our customers might expect and that our teams might need. And in terms of determining the next thing to build, it's been like every step along the way, there's been the next most important thing is the one that is taking the most time for our team to do, or that's blocking our customers the most.
And speaking of team, I'm curious about how you went about building that team. And I guess, you know, there's the internal team, right? And then there's also the painting team, right? Which I understand is internal from the standpoint of they are full-time employees. But how did you go about building those teams? And what did you look for in those people to indicate that they were the winning horses to join you?
We definitely went through some growing pains early on, specifically with hiring painters. It's tricky to figure out the right sort of personality type to hire for someone who does this sort of work. What I mean by that is painting is a fairly repetitive task. For someone like me, it might be even considered a monotonous task, right? Like if you told me I was going to paint rooms every day for the rest of my life, I might not be super interested in that. But there are definitely people who are far more into the crafts side of things, where they really want to do a great job of the thing they're really good at. They want to become expert at it. We also learned that, in general, being blunt and perfectly honest, I'm a pretty privileged dude, right? I've grown up with a lot of very good things in my favor. A lot of the painters that we work with come from backgrounds and lifestyles that are very different from mine. And so being able to relate on a human level to the people we're working with is really important, too. It's not uncommon for painters to be paid under the table. We learned that there's some educational aspect to that when we hire painters and we're paying them and taking taxes out of a paycheck, that oftentimes the first paycheck or two or three or four that we give to people, we have to explain to them why they're making X dollars an hour, but when they do the math, the amount that went into their bank account is a lot less than X dollars an hour. It turns out that tax is a thing, and that's something that we have to explain and is a very human experience. Honestly, I can remember my very first paycheck and the first time I saw taxes removed from my high school part-time job and feeling that disappointment. And it's something to keep in mind. So there's a lot of context to take into account when hiring the folks that we hire for painting. Just as well, many of them have been in the industry for a very long time and they're deeply expert in the things that they do. And we need to be able to let them do good work, but in a way that also conforms to the brand and the process that we're building. And those two things can butt head sometimes. If you're really set in your ways of doing something and you've been doing it for 40 years, it may be hard to hear, hey, actually, we want to do this step first so that the customer has the same experience every time. I guess the other side of this is hiring our HQ team and our engineering team, the product team that's building the software behind Craftwork. This is another spot where I'm really lucky. So my co-founders and myself all have startup background, reasonably extensive networks from our past lives, running other companies and working in other companies, and have had the fortunate happenstance of a lot of really good timing and a lot of really good right person at the right time moments. And we've been pretty picky about the people that we hire. A thing that we repeat reasonably regularly is that we're not hiring just to hire. We don't want to just fill a seat. We want the right person in the seat. So unlike, I don't know, many startups during the boom days of VC funding and things like that, we're not hiring an army of engineers to build this thing and figuring it out later. Instead, we're hiring our engineers and our salespeople and our ops team and all the other people that we hire very deliberately and making sure that we grow in a way that's responsible and that we attract the right skill sets and the right level of talent when we need it.
This episode is sponsored by Cashfly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where Cashfly comes in. Cashfly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, Cashfly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only Cashfly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. Hello, welcome to the Data Analytics Club. Do you know the password? No, I didn't know there was one. Do you know how to code? No. Do you know how to query data? Like, ask a question? I guess not. I see. Then you can't be in this club. Sorry. Goodbye.
don't be left out of the analytics club. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. ClearQuery provides you with the information you need without requiring you to do the heavy lifting. Their Ask ClearQuery feature allows you to ask questions in plain English, helping you find relationships and connections in your data that may have previously gone unnoticed. You can even visualize your data with presentation mode, taking your data storytelling to the next level. Pricing is based on storage, not licenses, and that ensures that you get the most bang for your buck. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify data analytics, your data analytics, with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. This will be interesting, given the stage that you're at. I'm curious about scalability. Where did scalability come into play? Did you build this from day one to scale efficiently from a technological standpoint, or have you been fighting this as you grow?
We entered this day one knowing that this was something we were going to scale beyond just a mom and pop shop, right? Like we're not growing a lifestyle business. We're trying to build something that can be a very large national business. From the onset, we've had to do the sort of classic startup balance of velocity versus quality and complexity versus speed of delivery of software. And so we've been building the whole way with the acknowledgement that we're doing more than just keeping a spreadsheet of customers, that we know that someday in the future, we're going to want to look back at these things and do like a statistical analysis of all these projects to see how pricing is going or what type of paint projects we convert on the most readily, or if there's commonalities between customers that we understand. We've been trying to create something that sort of scales up responsibly and in a way that readies us for our plans to expand eventually. So we're just in Charlotte right now in North Carolina. We have plans to expand to other markets. And the implication for a software team in that sense is that everything we build needs to be contextually aware of the market that it applies to. For all of my software building friends listening to the show right now, if you imagine yourself building a tool to run a paint business, and then imagine trying to build a tool to run a paint business in 50 different cities, those are two pretty different problems. As we're deciding on what the next feature to build is, we often ask, okay, what does this look like with two markets? And what does it look like with 10 markets? And what does it look like with 100 markets? And how do we build the next logical step to get us headed in that direction? We obviously can't build everything to be ready to be 100 markets tomorrow, but we can build it in a way that's at least aware that it's going to be there eventually.
So, Mike, as you step out on the balcony, look across all that you've built thus far. What are you most proud of?
I guess what I'm most proud of is that the thing that we're building requires a lot of people to work with each other and to treat each other really well. And there's a lot of humility required in that. Our product team is often wrong about the things we build, and we have to be ready to be corrected and to build the next thing. We also have to be really good about communicating with our customers. We are doing one of the most privacy invasive things you can imagine, of literally letting ourselves into our customers' homes. And so we have to be aware of that and ready for that and create products that are designed with that in mind. Just as well, we're affecting our painters' lives by hiring people who work for us full time. Many people spend more time at their job than they do at home. And hopefully we're creating an experience for our painters that is something that's not only rewarding and pays well compared to other jobs as a painter, but also creates steps towards career progress and things like that, and can be something that you can hang your hat on at the end of the day. This is far from my first job, and I've founded a couple of companies before this, and this journey feels different from those in the sense that I can feel the scars that I've earned from past jobs and past companies that I've created, and the learnings from those things have been really apparent along the way. And I've tried to be really vocal with my team and with my co-founders and with the people who I have a sphere of influence with about the things that I'm learning, the things that I think I'm doing right, the things that I want to do better, and trying to be conscious and aware of all the things that can come of this if we do it right.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
We went a little too hard in the direction of trying to get our customers to scope projects online. We had in mind that we didn't want to have to enter our customers' homes to scope out their project, to give them a price, an estimate of what their project would cost. We knew that we had a pretty good algorithm for pricing that we could be decently confident in, and we put a little too much in the hands of our customers early that was deterring the customers from finishing the process of doing an estimate. If you went to craftwork.com as recently as last June, I want to say, you could go and start an estimate and build out an estimate for yourself and use essentially all the same tooling that our team uses to determine the price of your project. You would go and add your office and your bedroom and your living room and the things you want to paint in each of those, walls and ceiling and so on. And along the way, you would be getting an instantly updating price to show you what each little change would cost. And that was a really intricate tool, and we went through a lot of design process to make it in a way that was flexible and redundant and would let you pick up the process later on if you wanted to start it now and finish it later at night. But the consequence from a human psychology and design perspective was that over and over, the telemetry showed us customers would pull this thing up and have essentially decision paralysis by staring at the cost of their entire project and starting to toggling on and off individual line items over and over. And what that indicated was that there was the sort of behavioral economics thing that was likely happening of price grounding, where you scope out the whole project, you might see that, you know, holy cow, to paint my whole house, it's $10,000. Maybe I don't need the ceiling in this room. Let's take that off. And maybe I want, you know, just one door in that room. Or maybe I don't want to paint the doors. Maybe we don't need to do the second bedroom. And rather than ever submitting something and having a conversation with us, they were just going through this process and like making tiny minute changes and never actually hitting the button to go forward with the thing. So on a lark one day, we experimented with, what if we just took that thing out and put in a contact form that said, put in your name and contact information, name, phone number, email address, and give us like a one sentence description of your project, and we'll get in touch with you as quickly as we can to scope it out. And we learned that was a much better way to get the top of the funnel populated. And what we got really good at along the way was doing work to make sure that, that part of the process was as unpainful as possible. If you send me a request to paint your home, we'll go and scout out Zillow and see what pictures we can find of your home. And when you tell me you want the bedroom painted, I can say, oh, cool, I have your pictures on Zillow. Is it this bedroom that has two windows in the corner? Great, that one looks like it would cost about this much. And we can do that very quickly. And from the jump, we're creating a human experience and a connection with the person that we're talking to, rather than putting that all in their hands and saying, hey, go do this reasonably complicated task of spinning up an estimate for yourself.
Well, this will be fun to ask, and I'm curious, you know, where you're going to take it. What does the future look like for the product and for your team?
We want to scale this thing to other markets, and so obviously getting to other markets is part of the story for us. Before we do that, we also want to be decently confident that the thing we've built works really well and that we understand how the business is working in one market before we jump to a bunch of other ones. We've been pretty cognizant of the fact that there have been a bunch of startups that landed a ton of funding over the past 10 years or so and scaled far and wide as one of their first steps and then had to backtrace their way into figuring out how to be profitable. And we're aiming to do exactly not that. Our thought is that if we can build a business that we know is something that works in one market, we can scale up to other markets in a way that's responsible and also has some drive behind it, right? Like, we'll do it quickly once we're ready to do it, but we want to know that the thing we're building is ready. We want to know that when we go to market 5, it's the same as going to market 2, 3, and 4, and that we have some confidence in the speed that these things will build up along the way. What that means for us is that scale sort of starts by building a better bread box here in Charlotte. When we decide the time is right, opening our doors in other locations in a deliberate way. The thing that I get asked a lot is, like, when are you going to spin into other services? When are you going to start thinking about electrician work or plumbing or carpentry? And the answer is, we might never. We might do that eventually, but we need to figure that out. We've gotten a lot of learnings from the fact that getting really good at doing just painting is important, and it's actually a really hard problem. There's a lot of unknowns that come into it. And the other thing I'll lean on there is that for all of time, essentially, people have been running paint businesses successfully as their sole career. And I would venture to say that most people who have had their homes painted probably haven't asked their painters when they're going to start plumbing.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mike, let's switch to you. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
I've been instilled with a good work ethic from a young age from my parents. I've had a drive to do more the whole way through since as long as I can remember, I've wanted to do more things. From a career perspective, I've learned from a ton of people who've been like mentors to me, who've done kind things for me without the expectation of anything in return. The list of those people is broad and wide, and I'm really grateful for that. There is a ethical and moral drive to give back where I can. So apart from craftwork, one of the things I do is I publish a weekly newsletter where I write to developers and startup founders and people who are living a life like me that sort of aspire to be able to build a company and to build products that they care about. And I'm trying to give away everything I know for free. The idea is subscribe to the thing and I'll tell you what I'm thinking about, the hard problems that are sitting on the back of my mind right now. Because I've been in the right room at the right time or pulled up the right Twitter account at the right time in my career and bumped into people who've taught me important lessons without me having to walk in their shoes directly. And I think that I'm really driven to pass that on as much as possible.
So last question, Mike. You're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit, actually several times?
The two biggest skills you have as someone living in the time that we do is your ability to learn quickly and soak up information and try things is a huge pillar of being successful. Just being able to go and dive deep on a problem or on a specific thing that's got you hung up is important, and pulling down the information and coalescing it into something that is useful for you is a massive skill. That's really useful. But that skill is also not nearly as useful as it would be if you're not able to learn from when you're wrong and learn from your mistakes. What I'll say for that is that I'm wrong all the time. I do things incorrectly left and right, and I try and learn from them and roll out of each day with something that I've learned from mistakes that I've made. A big part of building companies and building products and working on really high performing teams is being able to say, oh, I learned from that experience. I wasn't right the first time around, and here's why. Here's what I learned, and here's what I'm going to do differently in the future. I can think of versions of myself from not too long ago that were very bad at being wrong. It is tragic to think of those moments in time where if I had just been a little more open to change or influence, that I might have taken a different path. And I think that applies really to all of us. So be ready to be wrong and be ready to learn when you need to learn something new.
That's fantastic advice. Well, Mike, thank you for being on the show today. Thank you for telling the creation story of Kraftwerk.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. It was really a privilege, and I appreciate you hosting the show. It's a great way to hear from other people in the industry, and definitely a super exciting way to be able to give back.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.